Hey guys, Ron Flacone here. You are listening to the Indie Bohemians.
Indie Bohemians!
Coming at you. Carmen Morales is sitting with me.
Hello.
Thanks for sitting in again.
Yeah, no,
always
problem,
love it,
man.
When you do this. We are in Florida at Orlando. We just did a show at the Orlando Improv.
Yeah.
It was fun. A wonderful time. It's a really fun night.
Orlando's not bad if you're just visiting.
It is, you know, and I am enjoying my extended visit here, as are you.
Mm-hmm.
We're both kind of down here, working out of here for the January, as that's an appropriate way to spend January.
Yeah, we're like comedy snowbirds. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, no, it is nice. It's a good plan.
We come down. It's very nice. The weather's so much better than where we're actually from. It's very great.
You're actually from here.
Yeah.
So the weather is...
The weather's the
you're
same.
You're used to
all the
great
time.
Weather.
Yeah, Florida where there's butt sweat.
Yeah.
In December and January. It's very nice.
I am loving it. I mean, I have talked about this on the show so many times, how over I am of winter. Completely just over it in every sense of it. And I'm going to have some of it because eventually, if you're a comedian, you do experience some winter if you're on the road because that's where a lot of the work is because people need to not be thinking
about... Because they're so miserable.
Right.
Because of the cold.
Right. So, you know, you're going to have a little bit of it, but, you know, you try to put it off as much as you can. Be a comic snowbird, as you put it. Mm-hmm. That's a cool thing, by the way. We should try to coin that.
That would be cool, right?
Yeah, like that should be an industry thing that kind of happens.
Or like young comedy snowbirds. There's a few comics that I know that do that. That they'll book themselves in the Southeast for just the winter.
Yeah, well, a lot try to, but it's not always.
But then
a lot
of them try to do the opposite because all the money is in the Midwest,
right?
Because you have to risk your life to be able to make it to that one nighter in Petoskey, Michigan, in the middle of that blizzard,
which is on the tour agenda.
It is.
Yeah,
I'm so
Petoskey.
Excited.
Yeah, we're doing that gig together too.
We are doing that gig.
Yeah. Should be good. So anyway, it's been an interesting week for a number of reasons. I thought that we would talk about, first of all, here. Look, do you see the lizard?
There is a lizard, a dead one that's right here in plain sight. Kind of weird that you have a dead animal just chilling here.
He's eventually going to be disposed of, but not ready yet. Here, all right, so...
Are you going to make, like, one of those dead butterfly things where you just pin them to a board and you're like, look it, I found this species of this thing.
I was thinking it might be cool to laminate them, but I'm not going to do it. I thought it might be neat. So here's the thing. I've been spending some time down here in Florida and I'm fascinated by some of the animal life here. I'm fascinated by seeing lizards all the time. I like it that they scatter as you're walking around. It's
by
super
animal
cool.
Life, you mean just the lizards. Like that's the only thing you've been going on about these lizards.
Well, wait a second, because the reason I brought this
and
up
by the way, there's several different kinds of lizards. There's the Florida lizard, the cute little green one.
That's actually been
they're kind of going extinct because there was this Spanish type lizard who came here a few years ago and who is more of like a little, like a mini dragon type thing, who's been kind of like killing off all the little Florida lizards.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. They're kind of cooler. They're kind of cooler.
What's my dead dude over there?
I can't tell because he's dead and shriveled and in a skeleton. You
well,
have like a
happens.
Lizard skeleton.
They don't get
skeleton.
Enough sunlight when they get inside. They
well,
get inside and then
you
they
know,
just
you
die.
You shouldn't trap them in the house.
I didn't.
Because
no, no,
you're
no,
so
no.
Fascinated
he got
by
in,
them.
No, no, no. These guys get it on their
oh,
own.
Oh, you're saying this was a lizard suicide? That's what you're saying?
Accidental suicide. I don't think he wanted to die. I think he just wandered inside and was like, well, let's see what the story is here. Maybe he smelled something that smelled like food. It might have been food. I don't know. What do lizards eat? I know. IndieBohemians@gmail.com. What do lizards eat?
Save us the Google search if you
guys
could.
Yeah, right? We're going to pretend we don't have a satellite in the sky that has all kinds of answers.
We're going to pretend there isn't an information highway that we all have access, easy access to.
But email us anyway. IndieBohemians@gmail.com. It is going to be an exciting show today. TJ Miller is the guest.
The TJ Miller.
Yeah.
He's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, totally.
He's pretty cool. He did a couple snazzy things.
He did. So that interview is coming up. But, Carmen, the reason I brought up my fascination with the animals wasn't just because of the lizards. It's because coming back from the club tonight, we're coming at you right after the show. It's late on a Wednesday night where we're at, January 13th. coming back from the club, I had a first-time experience.
What did you see?
She says as if she wasn't sitting next to me.
As if I wasn't a witness of you freaking out.
I saw my first jackrabbit. I did not know that's what it was.
Yeah, you did. You were like, that's a deer, a baby deer.
I thought it was a baby deer. That's how big it was.
No, baby deer don't run like that.
Well, wait a second.
They have longer legs.
They look like deer. I thought he was scared.
Of course he was scared. He was close to the road. There comes a huge 2-ton vehicle. Of course he's going to hop to the woods.
Right, but I thought the reason he was a deer that was running goofy, and he was running goofy because he was so scared. He was just kind of like, sort of like, it was almost like a gallop sort of type deal.
Like a hop, you know, like a rabbit does? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yes. Carl Morales, everybody. Anyway. Yes. No, and I never. Here's the thing, man. This is sort of exciting for me because growing up. Is that our food?
Mm-hmm.
Is our food ready?
Yeah, man.
Do you have to go get it now? Did the oven stop or did it keep going?
It keeps going.
So it might burn if you don't do something right now?
It might. You never know.
All right. You wanna get the food and then I'll continue my story?
How about I turn that out and then you tell me why it is you're so fascinated by jackrabbits?
You want me to tell you that now or do you want to grab the food? And then professional operation here, folks.
I don't know why you're yelling at me. I just figured you should just tell me the thing that you were about to say.
Well, when I grew up in Pittsburgh, there was this amusement park called Kennywood. And they had a ride there called the Jackrabbit. It was one of the roller coasters. It's a vintage amusement park. And I'm just kind of talking to the hoi polloi. I think Carmen can hear me. But she's in the other room getting this food that we heated up in the oven. Post-show activities, two comics. This is how it really is on the road. So this is a total inside peek on this week's episode. But it was my favorite roller coaster. It still is one of my favorite roller coasters in the world. It's a wooden roller coaster because this amusement park called Kennywood in Pittsburgh, where I grew up, is kind of a vintage amusement park. If you saw the movie Superland, it was that was filmed there. Or no, not Superland. Adventureland. Excuse me. Adventureland was filmed at Kennywood Park in Pittsburgh. You know, in that movie, of course, took place in the 80s. So it was a vintage amusement park. That was what they used as the setting. And they preserved a lot of the way the amusement park used to be. Still have a lot of wooden roller coasters. My favorite one is the Jackrabbit. At the end of it, there's a double dip hill where you, like, go. And you literally do fly out of your seat. It's incredible. But I've never seen a live Jackrabbit before. So this is sort of exciting for me.
Well, that's kind of strange because I've never been on a roller coaster Thank you. I've never been on a roller coaster called the Jackrabbit, and I'm a big roller coaster fan. Like, I've been to Carowinds in North Carolina where they have, I think maybe about 13 or 14 roller coasters.
Mm-hmm.
And
the fries are really good, by the way.
Yeah, you know, I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I heated them up just right.
Yeah, no, you did a good job.
I've been a homeless person for a while, man. Pretty sure I know how to heat up some food in the oven, you know?
Well, bravo.
Thank you. But yeah, roller coasters have always been a good time for me, but I've never been on the one called the Jackrabbit. What part of the country is it in?
It's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where I grew up.
And that's
the amusement park is called
Kennywood.
That's
an interesting kind of town. Is that like a real place or? I thought there was just a football team from there. I didn't know it was like a real place.
They got a football team and a hockey team and a baseball team.
What?
And a couple universities and my family.
Well, that makes it legit. If you got family there.
To.
Wow, you know? Look at you with
yeah,
the public school.
Yeah, they got all that
school.
Stuff there. Yeah, it wasn't public school, actually.
It was private. You went to a private school?
I went to a Catholic high school.
Ugh.
Yeah.
You went to a Catholic school?
You knew that about me.
I didn't realize it was a Catholic high school. I guess I always thought it was like middle school.
Well, it was both. It was all, dude, K through 12, man. I carried the card, you know.
Oh, that's weird.
No, really. I mean, you know, my family's Catholic. That's, you know, wasn't that uncommon.
No, it is uncommon. I mean, I went to a public school, so it is uncommon for us folk who had to mingle with the folks who weren't Catholic.
No, I had a lot of friends at public school. No. I mean, I grew up in an Italian Catholic neighborhood, and so it wasn't uncommon. I mean, it was pretty much half and half.
Uh-huh.
Like, in my neighborhood, about half the kids went to Catholic school, half the kids went to public school. So, you had friends in both, you know. I mean, I had a lot of friends that went to public school, you know. That
did you think less of your kids that went to public school?
No, of course not. Come on. No. No, in some ways I was a little...
Were you like, Jesus don't love you so much?
No, I mean, I was kind of envious, actually, because first of all, in high school...
They didn't have Jesus in their class.
No, but you know what they did have? They had girls.
Because you went to an all-boys school.
Yeah, I would have traded in the Jesus for girls any day. And they had, they got to wear what they wanted.
These broads make this Jesus real palatable.
So, yeah, and they got to wear what they wanted. I had to wear a tie.
Ew.
You know what? I'm not the most...
Did you do it all disheveled? You know, like all those 80s coming-of-age teens movies?
I put in a little effort. I'll say this. You know, I'm not the most, like, handy dude when it comes to anything. And I'm not the most savvy dude when it comes
really?
To... Really? Yeah, you know that
like
about me.
You seem like a construction worker.
No. So far from it. But but I could tie a tie in my sleep to this day.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, well, I wore a tie.
Isn't
every
it just
day
over, under, over, under?
Pretty much. I mean, it's not hard, but a lot of people struggle with it because they're not used to it. And I remember freshman year gym class, and I wanted to talk about some real stuff, by the way, but freshman year in gym class.
I didn't know
class,
you had an agenda for this show.
Of course I did. I always have an agenda, Carmen. Nice. I'm a planning dude. Freshman year in gym class, there was this dude. I forget his name. I think it was Dan. Yeah, his name was Dan. He was like this big dude, and he was like one of those dudes. He wasn't like necessarily a bad guy, but sometimes he would just be like unnecessarily mean. Like he's one of those dudes. Like he was not very bright. Like one of those like is he okay? Like that not bright.
Right.
So to kind of like establish himself, he would kind of pick on people.
Right.
Like he wasn't a straight up bully, but he treaded with it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He skirted the shores of bullying.
Yeah, he dipped in the bully the bully.
He dipped
pond.
A toe in the dilly yeah. pond, the bully pond.
We'll say a foot. You know? one of his big.
He was
bulky
ankle deep
feet.
In the bully.
Yeah, yeah. Ankle deep in that bully pond with his big old ankles, and his mind was elsewhere, but. So he was that guy, and he never bothered me, but one day, it was after gym class, and he just goes, everyone else is gone, and like I was like the last person, and he's like, Placone, and I'm like, oh man, dude, did I do something to make him mad? And like it's just us, and I'm kind of looking around, and he's kind of like almost glaring at me a little bit, and I'm like, dude, what did I do to this guy? Like why does he want to mess with me? I was always a small kid, so like if you want to prove yourself...
You're
I
right.
wasn't one of the kids you would want to mess with. Like
right.
oh, you beat up the harmless skateboarding kid that plays in a punk band. Why'd you do that? Like,
yeah, right.
But, and then he goes, do you know how to tie a tie? And I was like, yeah, dude. And he, like, just sort of handed me his tie. He didn't know how to tie a tie.
Aww.
Yeah, he needed me to tie his
so
tie
So you showed
him.
The bully the way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I just kind of tied it. Well, and then what was funny was, like, I tied it as if, like, I was going to wear it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I tied it, like, for my body.
Right.
So when he put it on, it, like, really went, it barely went down past his chest. You know, because he's, like, three times my size.
Like nip length.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a nip length tie on him. It went down to like my waist. I was like, here you go, buddy. You're good. But yeah, I tied the tie for him. I hope he's doing well. I don't know what he's up to now. So it's been a weird week.
Has it? What's going on?
A lot's going on. And we've been hanging out for a lot of it. We don't need
sure.
to act like that's not the we did a bittersweet is what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
A bittersweet David Bowie dance party.
We did. We
and,
did.
Thanks
it
for
was,
that, by the way.
No
that
problem,
did
man.
Help me feel a little bit better.
It was definitely in mourning for both of us, but it was a moment where I could see where it was like, okay, well, we could either be sad about this or we could celebrate it. And you were like, what should we play? And I was like, let's... dance, and then we
and then
actually
we played a lot more. You know,
it was definitely you know a block of Bowie songs after that. But we opened with a dance song, and
yeah.
we danced, and I was like, "Well, we should dance to Let's Dance."
Yeah.
And then you're like, "Okay," and then I was like, "All right, let's do it." And we danced, and it was fun.
You know, it's one of those things. When I woke up, somebody posted it on my Facebook wall. Because I have a joke about David Bowie that I did tonight. I did tonight at the Orlando Improv in tribute.
Mm-hmm.
And someone posted it on my wall. I wanted to believe it was a hoax. The person that posted it, I was like, how gullible are they?
This has got to be. Is this a Snopes thing that we need to check out? Right? Yeah.
That's always where you go first. You're like, please tell me this is. I mean, I remember when Robin Williams died.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is a hoax.
I Snopes it too.
And then really quick, I found out, no, this is legit because my sister started texting me and she lives in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
So it's like she was there and I was like, oh. You know, and this was, you know, once you do a little research, you're like, oh, yeah, no, it's real. David Bowie died. And that was, you know.
You know it's real when your mom posts about it. Like, that's how deep it goes, is, like, when our parents are the gender, like, the people.
Because my mom did post about
it. The people who are not good at social media get the news, too.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you know it's really penetrating.
My mom's pretty okay at it. But, I mean, I see what you're saying, but she's okay on the social media. My mom.
All right. I mean, if you want to have an argument about it, I'm just saying, like, older people in general, they're not as savvy as we are,
right?
About the social media.
Okay. No. I was just saying she's okay at it. That's all. But here's, you know, it's weird actually. The last time I went out to breakfast with my folks, like, there's this popular breakfast place in Pittsburgh called Pamela's.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was home for, I think it was just over this past holiday, the winter holiday, Christmas or whatever. And we like to go there for breakfast. They have these hotcakes, whatever. And there's a really cool record store right down the road. So typically I would go to the record store while they would like wait for the table and they would come if they wanted to, whatever. So I go to the record store. One of the finds I had was this really cool Bowie live album.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty killer. It's two discs. Or two albums.
Two records, right.
Yeah, two records. It was a really good find. And my mom's a huge David Bowie fan. So we kind of talked about, you know what, we got to see David Bowie. Because she had never seen him. That's one of the few, like, my mom went to a lot of shows, so did my dad. That was
right.
Like, I mean, their first date was at a concert. And I think it was a Springsteen show, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, she's seen a lot from that era, you know, like, she's seen pretty much everyone. Never saw Bowie. Huge Bowie fan. Never saw Bowie. I've never seen Bowie. Now I will never get to. Neither was she. But, yeah, we made plans, like tentative plans. It's like next time Bowie. Because he was touring up until the end. Not a ton.
Which is pretty impressive, dude. And that's pretty. That's something that I've always been very admirable of is like.
He was
you
only
know,
69.
The Bowies, the Elton Johns, like the dudes who had it and still have it. Like, and really are just. They're still doing it. You know what I mean? They're still doing it, and it's still impressive, and it's still something worth going to see. Like, that always is really cool to me.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. Not the same for comics, usually.
Why do you say that?
Because, like, you don't get to see... I mean, I guess with the exception of, like, I don't know, Don Rickles and... I don't think it's the same because you get to have all of the nostalgia attached to things you've already heard, songs you've already heard sung. It's not the same with jokes. I don't think it's the same thing.
Well, because it's a different, like they don't revisit old material.
Right. They're not like, all right, here's a joke back from 82.
Remember this one?
Yeah, exactly.
See, I kind of like the evolution for the comic, though. And especially like the first one that comes to mind for me is like Carlin. You know, like Carlin changed a lot. Were his last couple specials as good as some of the stuff he had done in, like, the 90s? In my opinion, no. I think Complaints and Grievances was some of his best. I think Jammin' in New York. And I think some of those ones after that, you know, he clearly was not quite at the top of his game at that point. He had a big notebook with him on stage.
Well, sure, he's an older man. It's going to be harder for him to remember everything, sure.
Right.
But he's also still cranking out new thoughts.
Right.
Which is impressive still at that age.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is cool about it. It was cool for me. And some people are like, well, it wasn't as funny and this and that. I'm like, yeah, it kind of wasn't, but it didn't have to be. Because he was just a dude at that point.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, you're going to see George Carlin because you want to hear what he has to say. And I mean, the American Dream bit, it gives me chills every time I listen. I don't even know if you would call that stand up necessarily. I mean, there's some jokes in there.
Sure.
But it's more just like a piece of prose that should be required listening for everybody in this country.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that to me is just as special as anything else. So, I mean, I don't know. I kind of enjoy that evolution, but it's a much different evolution than, say, you know, someone doing cuts from albums they put out 30 years ago.
It's also, and I've always thought this, and I've kind of always wanted to talk about it, but I never figured out how to way to do it. I feel like musicians get more of a graceful fall than comedians do, because you can always go play Eagles covers at a seafood restaurant, and comedians never really get that. You never really get to go, you know, at the end of it all, if you're not famous, say you're not, like, you don't ever get to go tell George Carlin's joke at a Red Lobster during happy hour. Like, that's not how it works.
But you get to do your jokes at those types of places. You get to do your jokes at the seafood restaurant.
But a venue would be less likely to be open to something like that. They'd be less likely to... There is no cover band for comics. Like, there is no that scapegoat. It does have to be your jokes.
Right. I don't know. I think I'm okay with that. Are you saying you're not okay with that? Or are you saying that...
I just think it's bizarre. Okay. I think it's bizarre. And, like, that's a fascinating difference to me between music and stand-up. Because there's a lot of parallels. As I'm certain you've probably already discussed. But, like, that's, like, one thing that I always thought was interesting is, like, as a musician, if you know how to play chords, you can always go to a seafood restaurant or a country club and play covers of songs.
Have you seen some bad cover bands at seafood restaurants?
I have.
Is that what this is stemming from?
I have.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
I've eaten plenty of scampi amidst some Eagles covers. A brutal version of Hotel California, which was also, as an aside, a brutal cover of a song which was stolen from another band, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, the Jethro Tull tune.
Yeah. That's awesome that you know that. Not a lot of people know about that. Yeah.
I know it's a deep cut thing. Yeah. I'm very familiar to one of those B-side facts to know, but, you know, some of us know.
That riff was. I mean, that riff actually comes from, like, I think it was a Bach tune. Like, it's like a classical riff. But Jethro Tull adapted it for rock and roll guitar. And, yeah, I think it was, like, the things we used to know, or the way we used to know by Jethro Tull. It's on the Benefit album. And, yeah, I mean, that riff is, like, identical to the way the Eagles adapted it for Hotel California.
What's even worse about that song is they were fans of Steely Dan, and their only tribute ever, like, the Eagles were fans of Steely Dan, and their only tribute ever to Steely Dan was that in that song... They say they stab you with their steely knives, and that was, like, their only tribute to Steely Dan, even though, like, Steely Dan was, like, a huge influence of theirs. Yeah. And it was just like, oh, thanks for this passe line in this song that has a riff that you didn't even write. Appreciate it. As a Steely Dan, I think I would be insulted.
I guarantee you Don Fagen does not care. Yeah. I've read the guy's book before. I guarantee you he does not care at all.
It's possible.
Yeah, he doesn't care. And I mean, that's interesting because, I mean, the Eagles, arguably more mainstream success than either one of those two acts. But I'll tell you what, I would take Jethro Tull or Steely Dan over the Eagles any day of the week.
There's only one song from the Eagles that really actually speaks to me, and that's Those Shoes. That's the one that's, like, I really, really enjoy. And again, it's not that much of a mainstream song. It's probably a B-side, I'm pretty sure.
We're going to tap out soon, but...
Don't yell at me.
Hey, it's my show.
All right. Do whatever you want.
But your thoughts on the State of the Union?
According to Obama, we're crushing it. I don't know if he knows. I think we're crushing it. It was basically, I felt like he should have mic dropped at the end of it. I feel like he should have, because that's basically what it was. It was like, look at how I didn't screw this up. Let me show you about how I didn't screw this up this last 7 years. And by the way, screw you, Paul Ryan. Like, that's kind of like, in all of you ridiculous Republicans who've been fighting me the last 7.5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, well, see, that was my thing. My entire feedback on it, which I mean, all we need is like a minute or two for this, is I've been saying the same thing pretty much the whole time. I wish his teeth would have been a little bit sharper. You know, I mean,
he could have been meaner about it. Sure, absolutely.
And I wish he would have been, because I mean, I think that like the whole thing of better politics, that was like a poignant part. But really, he could have also went a little bit deeper there and been like, you know what? This has been the most uncooperative Congress maybe ever in our history.
In parentheses, racist.
Right. Well, yeah. And of course, that has something to do with it. Sure. It's impossible to deny that. And it's disgusting. I mean, it really is. Like, it's so sad. And it was so evident in the division of the people who would stand up and clap and the people that wouldn't. I mean, it was all there. You looked out, you saw a dude sleeping. We've reached this
dumb. It's like, really? Really, guy? Doing a Sudoku? Doing a Sudoku right now?
It's just reached a level of hostility that is, like, just unheard of. And, like, even during Reagan and stuff like that was unheard of.
Yeah.
And now
everyone showed respect for this position of power.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really seem like that. It doesn't really seem. And what's unfortunate is it's by this almost an entire generation of people who were there for that, who were there for those precedents, who were there for, you'd call the president Mr. President. You stand when he walks in. You applaud when he says what he's done. Like, it's really just pretty simple things, and they were just there mean mugging him, essentially. Oh, you're going to cure cancer? Like, really, dude? You can't?
Yeah, people you can't just acknowledge. Oh, Ryan didn't clap for that. He's like, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, because he probably has money in the pharmaceutical companies. Anyways, but yeah, it's just, it was pretty amazing in the things that were said and in the reactions of what was said as well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I wish when he went to the Better Politics thing, which was close to the end of it, he would have really taken his gloves off and been like, you know what? This is not how we should be doing business. This is ridiculous. You know, like, we've reached a level of hostility in our and it's not even just, like, directed at him as the president. It's just, you know, like, how kind of partisan and divisive we've become.
Yeah, it's become a black and white thing. I don't mean that in any racial sense, but it's become a black and white thing is like, I'm Republican, so these are the only things that I could possibly ever be in agreement with. And there used to be kind of a scale. There was a gray area. There was a concept of being moderate. You know what I mean? But now it's almost cartoonish in how far they've got from each other and what the definitions of both of those things mean.
Yeah, well, and part of that is because on the right, you have to go so far to the right to get the nod in the first place.
Right.
Because they're trying to please that fringe part of the base, which actually is a small amount of people.
It's honestly really not.
That's why whoever gets that nod, they have to then backpedal and try to convince the populace that they're in the middle.
Yeah, that they're not a lunatic.
Right. Which is kind of fun to watch as someone who doesn't want to see anybody like that.
It is entertaining, but it's unfortunate that we're doing that for the person who's supposed to be running our country.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, that's not something I would want to see. Like, I would want somebody to be confident in the things that they're saying, not say all of this stuff just to get their peers, their psycho peers, to agree with them, to be put on a list of people to then be like, look, I'm not as crazy as I said I was.
Yeah. He should have ended the speech with, like, Trump, you serious? Come on. And then drop the mic.
Right.
That should have been the way he did it.
I mean, he made some subtle comments that were definitely directed towards Trump, which were pretty impressive.
He did make some nice subtle comments. He even took a few subtle jabs at the corporatocracy, at corporate USA, which it was really funny watching Paul Ryan squirm whenever he did that.
Yeah, his shoulders and his hands were very...
He got so squeamish.
He was super fidgety.
No, the way I see it, I was like, whenever Obama makes a subtle jab at the corporatocracy, which are just words, by the way. It's not like he ever actually really did anything that made him mad. But, like, whenever he did that, I think Paul Ryan's libido dropped 10 points and a nonprofit got its funding. That's what I like to think. Carmen, thanks for sitting in.
Thanks for having me, man.
Carmen Morales, where are you at this week for anybody that might be able to see you?
I'll be at the Tampa Improv in Florida if you guys want to check me out.
Yeah. So you'll be at the Tampa Improv. I will be at the Comedy Zone in Sunny Isles, Florida. So if you're in Florida, you could see one of us. Different sides of the state, but yeah. Nonetheless, we'll be out there. Carmen will be at the Tampa Improv. I'll be at the Comedy Zone in Sunny Isles, Florida. CarmenMorales.com.
RonPlacone.com.
Aw, thank you. I'm Ron Placone. You're listening to the Indie Bohemians.
It's time for the Monkey Minute. I'm Angie Doran for the Indie Bohemians. Charlotte is a playful baby macaque that caused a stir by being named after the British newborn princess. She looks likely, though, to walk off with the title of most popular female monkey at the Takasanayama National Zoological Garden. The poll began on Christmas to decide most popular female and most popular male monkey. The zoo is home to 1,516 monkeys. The monkey vote was delayed, though, because of the brouhaha over naming Charlotte after the daughter of Prince William and Catherine. Charlotte was born in May, the same month as her British namesake. Karaoke, age 9, is another monkey in the running. She's raising an abandoned baby along with her own offspring. The results will be on January 17th. That's the Monkey Minute. I'm Angie Doran for the Indie Bohemians.
Hey guys, Ron Placone here. I never really cared for doing a somber segment, but I had to do something for David Bowie. Pretty bummer news. I know a lot of people are bummed out. I'm among them. Personally, my short list of people that I would love to see that I have not seen yet, but were still able to see, the top two was David Bowie and Chuck Berry. And obviously, I'm not going to get a chance to see David Bowie. Never got a chance to see him live. I won't get to it at this point. And Chuck Berry is unfortunately going to be a long shot as well. He's pushing 90. He doesn't really tour much anymore himself. He mostly only plays in St. Louis where he lives. A story and tribute, if I could. I once was an instructor at a community college, and I once gave one of my students extra credit for correctly identifying a David Bowie song. Now, first of all, that is a great reason to give a student extra credit. In fact, that is the only reason a student should get extra credit, because extra credit is a nonsense concept that has no place in the real world. Let's say you work a job, let's say construction, and you build a wall, and you show that wall to your boss, and you're like, hey, here's the wall I built, what do you think? And your boss is like, this wall's terrible, there's a glory hole that's not supposed to be there, and it's made out of sticks and silly putty, this is an awful wall, I can't accept this. You can't say, oh, bummer, well, how about I write a paragraph about a book I read and we'll call it even. But if I'm in the classroom and I say, hey kids, it's speech day, we can be heroes for just one day, and one of my students goes, boom, David Bowie, that's saying to me, hey, aging millennial, we're still kind of with it. We're going to keep stuff interesting. It might not end okay for you, but in the meantime, we'll keep the world interesting. That's worth 5 extra credit points, my little China girl. Had I known January would be it, I would have given the kid a whole letter grade. Alright, that might be a bit much, but regardless, rest in peace, David Bowie. Thanks for everything you did. This is Ron Placone, signing out. Hey guys, Ron Placone here. We had the final State of the Union address from Obama's presidency. Let's start at the very beginning. Of course, Joe Biden did a preamble beforehand, quote, just in case anyone else needs to sober up. Mitch McConnell finally answered the question, how uncool can somebody look walking behind somebody else? And let's not forget the true star of the show, Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan didn't clap for curing cancer, he didn't clap for the troops, and the whole time his face looked like he was just pondering the first time he saw the Christmas Carol and how bummed out he was that things worked out for Tiny Tim. Obama did give Paul Ryan a shout out for the work he's doing in relation to poverty, however, I think there was a misunderstanding. Paul Ryan was concerned that the percentage of people living in poverty in this country is far too low. Paul Ryan also kept fidgeting with his hands as if he was thinking, man, I could be Spotifying that David Bauer guy I just found out about yesterday. Those hands were expressing the outrage of somebody recognizing Muslims as a major religion in the world. Which I know I mentioned David Bowie yesterday, but man, we live in a world where Lemmy is dead, David Bowie is dead, and Smash Mouth continues to make horrific covers. If there is a God, she has a good taste in music. If there isn't a God, that would make more sense right about now. The crowd shots were pretty classic throughout the entire event. There was a dude doing a crossword puzzle, a dude sleeping, and multiple people were definitely wondering, why did Kim Davis leave the house like that? I mean, I'm sorry. You look at that woman's hair and you're like, what hairstyle professional would let that happen? It's like seeing somebody that has a tattoo with spelling errors. Obama did get a few jabs in. He offered any election tips if anyone was interested. And he said, you should see that care package I sent to those dudes in Oregon. This is Ron Placone signing out. Hey guys, Ron Placone here. You're listening to the Indie Bohemians. My guest today is TJ Miller. And it's a really fun conversation. I want to give a little bit of a backstory here. So TJ Miller is an actor and a comedian, best known right now for his work on Silicon Valley. He also was a regular appearance on Chelsea Lately. And what happened here, you know, if you're looking for insider takes on the show or anything like that, that does not happen in this interview. I'm going to put that out there right now. That's not what happens in this interview. I was in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Charlotte Comedy Zone, the comedy club in that town. I was doing a show there on an off night right before New Year's, and TJ Miller was going to be there later in the weekend. I didn't have anything going on the rest of the weekend. I was hanging out in Charlotte. I saw TJ's show, and I had never seen a stand-up before. I was incredibly impressed by his show. It was very existential. It was very philosophical. He talked about time, language, mortality. And afterwards, I started asking him about books that he read. He's a big Nietzsche guy. We have that in common. So we kind of just started riffing on all that. And somebody else that was in the room with us said, man, TJ should really do your show, to me, which was a very nice, subtle plug, was a very nice kind of like, hey, man, I'm helping you out, because I wanted him to do the show, and I had brought up to him that I had a show that I thought he'd be really good on, but it wasn't until we were kind of, you know, talking about stuff, talking shop a little bit, that somebody else sort of set it up on the tee for me and said, hey, TJ should really do your show. I think he'd be a great guest on Indie Bohemians. I appreciated that. It was really looking out for me in a lot of ways. So he asked more about the show, wanted to hear a little bit more, and when I kind of told him what we're all about, he was willing to sit down for a little bit. So we sit down outside at the comedy club, just on a picnic table, and we talk about a lot of the stuff that was in his act. We talk about time versus language. We talk about rhetoric. We talk about philosophy. We talk about science. We talk about existentialism. We talk about nihilism. We talk about absurdism. What is the distinction between absurdism and nihilism? How do they interact? That's all in there. We talk about all that. And it was really interesting. You know, a lot of times when I do these types of segments, when I do these types of interviews, and just when I go about this show in general, sometimes, you know, I edit a lot of stuff out. Sometimes I have to make it presentable. In this situation, I left it as raw as I could because it just felt like the right thing to do. At one point in our conversation, which wasn't a super long one, but there was a lot going on in it. At one point in our conversation, a waitress interrupts. Not like rudely. She was just like, excuse me. But she had to tell him that some of their food had arrived because he was waiting on his friend and he didn't have a lot of time to talk with me. Also, at one point, you hear him lighting a cigarette. That's all in here. It really is. The only edits I have made to this discussion were a couple curse words, and that is for our terrestrial radio affiliates because they, of course, are subject to the FCC laws. So, you know, sorry to the podcast listeners, but you guys are used to that by now, that we do play by the FCC rules here and all the stuff that we put out there because of our presence on terrestrial as well. So without further ado, TJ Miller. I'm here with TJ Miller, and thanks so much for taking a few minutes, man.
Thank you, man. I was fascinated by you the second I met you.
I appreciate it. So let's jump right in. You were pretty philosophical tonight, talking about death, talking about suicide. Is that a newer thing for you?
Not as philosophical as I'd like to be, but more than that, not as funny, with a PH, as I'd have liked to have been. It's a little, it's newer. But it's like, it's a mission statement. The mission statement originally was, be a comedian, make people laugh, life is tragic, it's terrible, you can be a great drug dealer, so do it. And then now, sort of, I've repurposed it to be like, well, maybe existential satire sounds like the dumbest thing in the world, but that's all I can kind of pinpoint it as right now.
Well, what made you take that turn?
Like you said, it's newer.
Isn't it funny to watch? Now we both become radio people. Like, it's so funny how we change. Like, you and I
so
talking.
TJ,
and just like,
yeah.
So what's up? Yeah, it's like, Sunday. Ask it again.
So, well, what made you take that turn? Like, what made you kind of, like, take
Nietzsche's
that done?
Responsible to a certain extent. I think because I realized if I'm going to be an absurdist and then be relevant, Louis C.K. was an absurdist and then discarded it in favor of, like, the autobiographical approach to stand-up. Like, Richard Pryor, it's great. But it's like, how do I continue to be an absurdist but still be relevant, connect with people, all that? I think because everybody feels really lonely.
Okay.
And so then if I can weave that in and make people understand that that's what I'm really talking about, then maybe I can say a few things, you know?
So has it been, like, always successful, or have you ever just totally lost people?
It doesn't
people,
do well. I mean, the mortality thing in Nashville.
Yeah, we were talking
speaking
about
speaking to your peeps. disaster. It was a disaster. I mean, nobody wants to... The reason you're seeing comedy is to not think about your own mortality. You can say all these other reasons, but at the very, very bottom, it is that anxiety and fear of death. So to bring it up in this context is, like, kind of a dick move. So if I don't handle it correctly, you know, then an audience, yeah, will really turn on me. Yeah.
How have you ever, like, dug out of that? How do you usually dig out?
You just bomb a show. It's really awful. You know, people pay to see the show. But, yeah, you bomb a show, and people are like, that was awful, and they probably will never see you again. But you hope that in doing that, you get to a point where an audience is like, whoa, wow, and they leave. And it's not like, oh my God, look how insightful this guy was. It's just, you know, maybe I should ask a couple more questions than I'm asking right now. That's it. That's what Silicon Valley is.
Okay.
It's just us being like, hey, Silicon Valley, maybe ask a couple more questions than you're asking. You're asking why you're so brilliant all the time. They're very adept at doing that. But they should really be asking other questions like, is this making us awful people? Are we like a joke culture? All that stuff.
Mm-hmm. You talked about time being like the ultimate deity, which I kind of love a lot. I might not be quoting it.
No. That's exactly. We're in a bad position, which is that truly, after people accept that, then I have to be like, also the concept of a deity is ridiculous. As ridiculous
right.
as time. So that's a toughie. I mean, you know, I think people can't... I've decided now in my act to just say we live in a post-religious, post-meaning society.
Yeah.
I just say it. I don't argue.
And you remind them. Like, well, I noticed that.
You're reminding. A lot of people are like, no, we don't.
Sure.
There's Jesus billboards on the way from here, from Atlanta to here, you know?
But that billboard's not as universal as maybe it once was.
No,
or maybe it never was.
I think there's a lot of people who are like, no, of course there's a God. Why else would we be here? So what I do is I just take it for granted. And so the people, I'm not preaching, either the choir believes what I'm saying or doesn't. So I'm now talking to the people and I'm saying, so right, so you don't have God, so then maybe you have time. So like, take it like, how do you spend your time? What kind of time are you, how much time have we spent on this podcast? How much time do I need to give to Megan? How much time can I last before I call Kate and tell her like, time is running out. So to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, I first do that, then as soon as people maybe accept that, then I move to the next thing, which is like, there is no anything.
Well, did the fascination with time...
That would be a good album.
There is no anything.
Yeah.
That would be a great album title. Okay. There is no anything.
Yeah, let's see if we get there.
Yeah. Well, did the fascination with time, did that maybe stem from just thinking about one's mortality?
No. I don't think so. I think I started to realize it was really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Time is really entrenched in everything that we do. So that was when I had that realization, I was like, well, again, now I'll double back because I'm an absurdist. Time is much greater than mortality. You know,
okay.
If time existed before us, now it's going to get really boring. If time existed before us and there's no beginning to time because what happened before that and it's going to exist forever after us, it's more infinite than space because it's a concept. It's not even a physical thing. That's why physicists are so stupid because they're like, well, if we figure out that... No, there's nothing to do with it. There's something that you can't figure out that may even... Only philosophers have really talked about. And they're not... They'll never figure it out. That's how big it is. So, yeah, I'll say in some ways the goal will be to tell people that time is sort of all that there is. And then do you become a master of it? Or do you, because Nietzsche was very, become a master of yourself. It's like, no, we all could be masters of ourselves. But how many of us can, like, take a mastery over time? Then you really are in control of your life. Something that none of us want to have.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Out of fear or out of...
I don't know. What's your reason?
What's my reason?
Yeah, why would you rather not be alive?
Why would I rather not be alive? I mean...
Or maybe you would.
I dig being alive. I have those moments of doubt. Mm-hmm. I think it's a matter of, you know, like we always think about what's beyond. Is there anything beyond?
Yeah.
And, like, are we... And I think the big thing is, like, are we producing? Like, I think we have this natural desire to kind of produce, not necessarily reproduce, like, people.
Create.
And love to some extent. Yeah. And those are the things that we just can't escape. And then the other thing we can't escape that you also mentioned in your show, and we talked a little bit off mic about, is just that idea of language as well. And I wonder when you brought that up, if that was why you kept calling back to the idea of dreams.
I had a joke about, yeah, a little bit. Very insightful. I had a joke about, I didn't do it tonight, the idea of language being like, you can say young women, but you can't say young women. It's weird to go, oh, this is your Girl Scouts. Look at those young women, careerists, future, very industrious. Look at those young women, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't do that. That's weird. So that is touching on language, but I also think people like George Carlin have already talked about language. So
sure.
If anything, I'm kind of reiterating. In that instance. So, yeah, language is a problem, but, you know, Steve Pinker or weird authors like that have kind of looked at, and I want to read the guy that you told me about because...
Kenneth Burke, yeah.
Yeah, some people have already tread these ideas, so, yeah, should we reiterate them? Are they worth reiterating? Yes, absolutely. But is that any sort of pioneering? No, probably not.
Well, what's interesting in, like,
even if you have a great interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I like about, like, the time v. language thing and time and language thing that you kind of set up is it almost, like, makes it philosopher king and rhetorician. Yeah. You know, like, you had this one thing that's like, well, we can know the truth.
Rhetoric preceded philosophy, yeah.
Right, because it's like, we can know the truth is out there. Or, well, actually, no, the truth may or may not be out there, but we need to speak effectively because we can't escape language.
Nietzsche has a great thing where he goes, what is truth exactly? He was the one of the few weird ones who's like, is history important? Is truth important? Why do we love those things so much? We want to know a true historical account, right? And then even there, why are we so obsessed with the truth as something good or something great? He's like, myth and fiction are just as valuable. So yeah, you get into a weird place where you're even going, if you really question even, is there, you know, nihilism is like, forget truth. There is no real truth behind any of this.
What are your thoughts on that? Because that was actually going to be my next question.
Well, absurdism trumps it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I guess this is the last thing we'll talk about.
How so?
Well, absurdism, how so is our last question? Because Megan's around the
corner. Well, no. I didn't mean that. I meant, like, how would you say absurdism trumps nihilism? Like, in what way? Embellish upon that.
So... nihilism is kind of like nothing matters. Mm-hmm. There isn't any real truth or anything like that, right? There's positive nihilism and negative nihilism, right? Positive being like, okay, we have this new freedom. Negative, not even worth talking about. We have this incredible freedom.
Right, because nothing matters.
Yeah, so just like step up to the plate and make your own meaning. That's what existentialism is. But then... yeah, then you get to this point where, and this is how Trump said, yeah, what? No, we're okay. No, that's perfect. It's for Megan. Yeah.
Thank you.
And the screwdriver?
Yes, I got it already.
Thank you.
Oh, crap.
No, yeah, we have the same problem. All of us do, trying to break in. So absurdism, so Trump's it because it says, like, do it with a smile. Absurdism is nihilism with a smile.
Mm-hmm.
So you go like, well, none of it means anything. But isn't that hilarious?
Mm-hmm.
What a ridiculous thing. That even nihilism doesn't mean anything. It doubles back on itself.
Right.
Philosophy is so stupid. That's why it's totally out of date. It's dumb.
Yeah.
And science will be seen too. Nietzsche predicted that also, which is so weird that he was so smart. But yeah, science doesn't really mean anything. What are we gonna... all science has done is make us feel smaller.
Right.
And God, we feel so small.
Well,
even Sarah Silverman is like, we're just a speck of dust for a moment in the eternity of the, all that stuff. It's so depressing. It's so much more depressing than really it should be.
Yeah, like, I think I love the concept of science. Like, I love the idea of evidence-based, yeah. But I don't, like, as far as the execution, that sometimes leaves a bit to be desired.
So what are you going to do?
What am I going to do? Dude, I'm just going to keep trying to get my piece of the pie, however big or small it may be.
That's a good meaning to make.
And keep just living it as well as I can, you know, and learn.
And keep looking for love. I think it's really you seem to be pursuing a person who's wonderful and probably trying not to fight with her and love her and all that kind of stuff. I think that, unfortunately, in some ways, is the only thing that really gives you some meaning.
Are you a believer in love?
Yeah, I'm really in love. I'm very lucky across the board in comedy and in love, but love especially. But, you know, you don't have to be lucky in either of those things as long as you make whatever you are doing meaningful, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot for talking to me.
Thanks,
I really appreciate it, buddy. I know you took some time out, man.
You're an excellent radio personality, as we say in the business.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, man.
Cheers, buddy. TJ Miller. Make sure you check out his show, Silicon Valley. And also, you know, I really do got to say, if he's coming to a city near you, his website is tjmillerdoesnothaveawebsite.com. He does tour a good bit. If he is coming near you, I highly, highly recommend catching him do stand-up. Very, very, very interesting show. Incredibly cool stand-up show. And if you like what we talked about on this interview, you will definitely, definitely really enjoy seeing him live. I do highly recommend it. I'm Ron Placone. You're listening to The Indie Bohemians.